Good afternoon, and welcome to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls, The Courier. It's Friday, November 5th. I'm your reader, Bob Young. Let's look at the weather forecast. A breezy Friday is on the way as a warm front moves through eastern Iowa. Plan on plenty of sunshine today, with south winds gusting to 30 miles per hour this afternoon. Highs will be in the 50 to 55 degree range. This weekend, highs of 60 to 65 still look likely for Saturday, with highs well into the 60s for Sunday. There's a chance that a few locations may briefly hit 70 on Sunday afternoon as well. Mild air continues into the first part of next week, with the next system looking to arrive sometime around next Wednesday. Sunrise this morning was at 7:44 a.m. and sunset tonight at 5:55 p.m. And here's a reminder that tomorrow night before you go to bed, you'll want to turn your clocks back 1 hour because daylight savings time ends. Let's check the stories on the front page today. Vaccines for kids 5 to 11 begin locally. Reynolds vows immediate action against vaccine rule. And let's begin reading What Next for UAW and Deere. This story was filed by Kara Smith. Are Deere and Company and the UAW at an impasse in labor negotiations? It depends on whom you ask. Deere said Wednesday that the latest contract offer rejected by the UAW is the company's, quote, last, best, and final offer, unquote. Jan Hartman, a spokesperson for Deere, said Wednesday that the company was proud of its 6-year contract offer, which would have boosted pay and benefits for about 10,000 UAW workers. The UAW rejected the deal 55% to 45%, despite gaining majority support from some Quad City Union locals. The contract was rejected by locals in Waterloo and Dubuque. The UAW said Deere did not inform it that this was their final offer prior to alerting media organizations. UAW's notification system sent a text to members that read, quote, "The UAW is aware Deere put out this is our last, best, and final offer. We were never informed directly. Bear with us as we sort this out," unquote. When asked about the notification of the final offer to the UAW, Hartman said, quote, "In our beginning sessions with the UAW, both parties made numerous proposals in working to negotiate an agreement," unquote. Quote, "That meant both sides made concessions and compromises," Hartman said. Quote, "In reaching the second tentative agreement with the union's bargaining committee, we advised that the overall value of the compensation and benefits package were as far as we were willing to go," unquote. Labor experts said an impasse is difficult to define because each incident is unique and depends on the parties involved. Quote, "It's just at a point where both sides have given their best, last, and final offer," unquote, said Pat Pappas, employment lawyer. "You know it when you see it," unquote. The National Labor Relations Board requires an employer and unions to actively negotiate on terms, quote, "until they agree on a labor contract or reach a standoff or impasse." An impasse is defined as a total breakdown of the bargaining process after good faith negotiations, according to the NLRB. Quote, "The duty to bargain isn't terminated, though," Papa said. "It's only suspended. There isn't a formal process for declaring an impasse," according to Paul Iverson, labor expert at the University of Iowa's Labor Center. "Both parties have to be unwilling to make any additional offers. But if one party creates a new proposal, the other party is obligated to hear it." Quote, "If all they're doing at the table is trying to convince the UAW to submit this same proposal to another vote, you may be at an impasse while still being at the table," Iverson said. Quote, "The issue is either side willing to change their position at the bargaining table," unquote. Hartman confirmed that Deere and the UAW are still communicating. Quote, "We are still in conversations with the UAW and remain receptive to any proposals the UAW might make that will result in a ratified contract, but we have reached our maximum in terms of overall new costs," Hartman said. Iverson and Pappas said the terminology used by Deere, quote, last, best, and final offer, is considered a term of art in negotiations. This term of art, a word or phrase that has specialized meaning within a particular field, like labor relations, typically indicates a company has reached an impasse, according to Iverson. However, not all employers know the origin of the terminology and the full extent of what it means to use it. Quote, sometimes employers will use the terminology, quote, this is our last, best, and final offer, as a precursor to arguing toward impasse if the union doesn't accept the offer, Iverson said. Quote, but those words aren't magic. They don't create an impasse if one doesn't exist, unquote. The term originates from the Teamsters International Constitution that had a provision that required any bargaining committee to submit any last, best, and final offer from an employer to a membership vote, according to Iverson. Since constitutions are publicly filed with the Department of Labor, management attorneys that negotiated with Teamsters would use that language to force a vote. Quote, management attorneys started using the terminology last, best, and final offer to basically indicate we want you to take this to a vote, whether you agree to it at the bargaining table or not, Iverson said. The UAW Constitution doesn't have this clause, so Deere, using these terms, does not compel the union to hold a vote, according to the UAW. Iverson, who has experience in labor negotiations, said sometimes the final offer ends up being the agreement, but it isn't guaranteed. Quote, I've had negotiations where we're on the third, last, best, and final offer before we finally agree, Iverson said. Quote, for people that are experienced in negotiations, they don't place a lot of stock in last, best, and final because it's usually just a bargaining position, a little bit of a posturing, unquote. If an impasse is reached, Deere can implement the new agreement and fill union members' jobs with outside workers, according to Pappas. Quote, if negotiations reach an impasse, an employer can impose terms and conditions so long as it offered them to the union before impasse was reached, according to the NLRB. If Deere decides to implement the latest agreement, it would only be applicable to workers who are strike breakers, according to Iverson. But this does not absolve the parties from negotiating. In some negotiations, the implementation of an agreement causes workers to go on strike. However, since the UAW workers are already on strike, the outcome for Deere would look different. Quote, they would be unilaterally implementing terms only for the strike break, so only for replacements that they bring in or people that cross the picket line, Iverson said. So the impasse isn't as significant in this situation, unquote. Hartman said, although Deere's first priority is to get an agreement ratified, the company needs to start preparing for the future. Quote, I do believe we have to start thinking longer term if that doesn't happen, looking at each unit and where their needs are, Hartman said. Everything is on the table in terms of how we keep the business up and running, unquote. Hartman said she could not confirm if Deere were considering hiring outside workers to fill union members' manufacturing roles. If Deere unilaterally implements the latest tentative agreement and the UAW doesn't agree with the impasse, it can file an unfair labor practice charge with the NLRB, according to Iverson. Quote, that's how the National Labor Relations Board ultimately decides whether they're at an impasse, Iverson said. Quote, if they decide, no, you're not at an impasse, you can't implement these terms. You have to go back to the table, unquote. The NLRB states that employers can, quote, implement terms encompassed within a pre-impasse offer if negotiations with the union have reached a valid impasse, unquote. Deere and the UAW's communication about their final offer is unclear, and labor experts have differing opinions of what it might mean. Iverson said if the UAW found out it was Deere's final offer through the media, it could potentially qualify as bad faith bargaining. Quote, it's certainly evidence of bad faith to announce to the media something you've never said at the bargaining table, Iverson said. You have to give the union the opportunity to respond to what they're saying, unquote. Regardless of the level of communication between UAW and Deere, Iverson said that the recent media push shows a change in strategy by Deere. Quote, they've kept themselves out of the media as much as possible to this point, and now they've decided to go in an all-out media blitz to try to turn public opinion in their favor, Iverson said. Quote, but I think the community supports the strikers. It's a change in their strategy to try to litigate it, if you will, in the media rather than at the bargaining table, unquote. Amy Rivers filed this next story. COVID vaccines for ages 5 to 11 are approved. Here's how to get one in the Cedar Valley. Waterloo. Elementary-aged children are the latest group eligible to receive COVID-19 vaccinations, and shots are now available in the Cedar Valley. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention on Wednesday approved the use of the two-shot Pfizer-BioNTech COVID vaccine at one-third the strength of the dose administered to those older than 12. A Pfizer trial of 3,100 children found the vaccine was 90.7% effective in preventing symptomatic COVID-19 and found no serious side effects. Quote, I am glad that the COVID-19 vaccine will now be available to children ages 5 to 11, said Representative Ashley Hinson, the Republican representing Northeast Iowa's 1st Congressional District. Quote, parents will now have the opportunity to choose if they want their children to be vaccinated and if that is the right decision for their families. This is another step toward getting us back to health and back to normal life, unquote. Around 248,000 children in Iowa are eligible for the shot, according to the Iowa Department of Public Health, which will receive an initial shipment of 99,000 doses this week and weekly doses after that. Unity Point Health Waterloo, Mercy One Northeast Iowa locations, and People's Community Health Clinic are all offering children 5 to 11 years of age the Pfizer-BioNTech COVID vaccine as of Thursday. Quote, getting children vaccinated as soon as they are eligible will help make sure they're protected this respiratory season, the Blackhawk County Health Department stated on Wednesday, press release. Unity Point Health will begin administering a low dose of the Pfizer vaccine to children ages 5 to 11 next week. To accommodate differences in dosing requirements, vaccine clinics specifically for the 5 to 11 age group have been scheduled at the following times and locations. And here's a list of those. At between 4 and 7 p.m. on Tuesday at Unity Point Health Prairie Parkway, 5100 Prairie Parkway, Cedar Falls. 2 to 7 p.m. Wednesday at Unity Point Health Prairie Parkway. 4 to 7 p.m. November 11th at Allen Hospital, 1825 Logan Avenue in Waterloo. And 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. November 13th at Unity Point Health Prairie Parkway. Families should call 319-226-2600 to schedule a time. Mercy One advised parents and guardians to schedule vaccinations through their child's primary care provider's office, said spokesperson Chelsea Keenan. People's Clinic did not immediately respond to request for a comment. Hy-Vee and Walgreens representatives also said they are prepared to offer the vaccine to children. Hy-Vee told the Iowa Capital Dispatch it would be by appointment only, while Walgreens did not offer specific details on how they plan to administer pediatric vaccines. In the next story, Reynolds vows immediate legal action against the vaccine rule. The story was filed by Rod Bossart and begins with a photograph of Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds speaking. Des Moines, a defiant Governor Kim Reynolds on Thursday promised immediate legal action over a Biden administration rule requiring larger businesses to have employees get COVID-19 vaccinations or face regular workplace testing. Quote, President Biden is taking dangerous and unprecedented steps to insert the federal government even further into our lives while dismissing the ability of Iowans and Americans to make health care decisions for themselves, Reynolds, a Republican, said in a statement. She promised to challenge the new federal Occupational Safety and Health Administration rule on vaccines for employees of companies employing 100 or more. Quote, Biden's plan pits Americans against Americans while forcing them to choose between making a living or standing up for their personal beliefs. Biden's actions will only worsen the existing workforce shortages and supply chain issues that hinder our economic recovery, the Iowa governor added. Quote, I believe the vaccine is the best defense against COVID-19, but I also firmly believe in Iowans' rights to make health care decisions based on what's best for themselves and their families, and I remain committed to protecting those freedoms. President Biden should do the same, unquote. Under Thursday's directive, workers at larger businesses will have to be fully vaccinated against COVID-19 by January 4th or face regular testing. According to U.S. Labor Department guidance, workers who choose the testing option may have to bear the cost and beginning December 5th are required to wear a mask on the job. Quote, for our country, the choice is simple. Get more people vaccinated or prolong this pandemic and its impact on our country, President Joe Biden said in a statement Thursday. Quote, the virus will not go away by itself or because we wish it away. We have to act. Vaccination is the single best pathway out of the pandemic. And while I would have much preferred that requirements not become necessary, too many people remain unvaccinated for us to get out of this pandemic for good, unquote. According to the Iowa Workforce Development, the OSHA rule could apply to more than 923,000 workers at over 2,200 businesses in Iowa. Last week, the governor signed legislation that allows employees in private Iowa businesses to claim they are medically vulnerable or have a religious objection to a mandated vaccine based solely on their statements, rather than with the backing of a professional. Iowans who lose their jobs for refusing to comply with an employer's vaccination requirement will still be eligible for unemployment benefits if they are terminated. On the same day, Reynolds announced Iowa had joined 9 other states in a lawsuit challenging Biden's vaccine mandate for all workers employed by a federal contractor, which is 1/5 of the nation's workforce. Jack Kaufman, a former state legislator who is chairman of the Republican Party in Iowa, joined Reynolds Thursday in berating the Democratic president for going back on a December 2020 promise not to make vaccine mandatory. Quote, small businesses have endured the COVID pandemic, worker shortages, supply chain issues, and an economy reeling, including climbing inflation, thanks to the disastrous policies of the Democrats in the Biden administration, said Kaufman. Quote, today's broken promise is placing yet another burdensome regulation on the country's small businesses and their employees, he added. Quote, the Republican Party of Iowa wholeheartedly supports Governor Reynolds' fight against this lawless mandate, unquote. Senate Majority Leader Jack Whitfer, Republican from Ankeny, said it appeared the Biden administration delayed the rule's implementations, quote, purposefully in a futile effort to avoid political fallout in this week's elections, calling the governor's effort to resist the federal overreach the right path for Iowa. Quote, I look forward to a swift and expansive suspension of this rule, he said. Senate Democratic leader Zach Walls of Coralville came to Biden's defense, saying at least he's trying to do something to end the COVID-19 pandemic and return some semblance of normalcy. Quote, what are the Republicans doing? What are they offering to bring the pandemic to a close? Nothing, he told reporters during an afternoon teleconference. Quote, the Biden administration has been very clear that they are going to crush the COVID-19 virus. We know that this is a pandemic. This is stretching into its second year, and I think people are ready to turn the page and for life to get back to normal. And the way we do that is getting more shots in arms, Walz noted. Now we have the next installment of the Courier's 20 Under 40 series. Sarah Conger, problem solver, focuses on moving the needle for VGM. This story was filed by Nancy Newhoff. There's something about a challenge that inspires Sarah Conger. If there is a puzzle to be solved, a problem that needs fixing, or a situation that needs immediate attention, she wants to be involved. Quote, I love problem solving. It's what gets me excited, she said. No matter how much you plan for an event, it doesn't always work out the way you thought, and problems need to be immediately addressed. My wheels start turning, and I want to figure it out, and I want to solve that problem, she said. There was never a better time for VGM Group to have Conger on board than when the pandemic hit in 2020. Conger, 31, of Grundy Center, has risen through the ranks of VGM, starting as an intern in events planning to become events manager, and now is vice president of corporate projects at the large Waterloo company. Sarah Lawrus, chief people officer at VGM, said company CEO Mike Malero wanted to put together a pandemic task force in the early days of the pandemic and tabbed Conger to chair the group because she is, quote, never afraid of a challenge, unquote. Conger said it was trial by fire as she put a team together to address so many aspects of the pandemic. Quote, one of the great advantages that I had here at VGM is that I do have the opportunity to work with a lot of different people and know a lot of people's skill sets and could find the right people and build a team to make this successful. We spent day after day in conference rooms on what we were going to do and how we were going to work from home, she said. They worked out plans for employees to work from home safely and effectively and with the right equipment. Quote, we wrote and rewrote all of our communications. That was for all kinds of different audiences, all the time, our leaders, our managers, our employees, making sure we had their best interest at heart, which of course we do, but making sure that was communicated. Quote, it's been a ride, I will say, she said. By June 2021, they began phasing people back to the office, but the task force continues its work, meeting to discuss local COVID-19 infection numbers and keeping on top of the national news. A native of Grundy Center, Conger graduated from the University of Northern Iowa with the intent to be an events coordinator. It was a field she loved as a high schooler at Grundy Center High, where she was involved in numerous events. She met VGM's Krista Mahi when Mahi came to speak to one of her classes and was selected for an internship at VGM in events planning. One of her first events to help plan was the 10th anniversary of the Heartland Conference, a large trade conference VGM brings annually to downtown Waterloo. She just recently helped plan the 20th anniversary of the conference, which took place in September. VGM hired her full-time in 2011 as events assistant, where she learned organization, planning, and execution of events and projects. Her role now is to focus on projects that move the needle for VGM, taking on projects at the corporate level or from a specific business unit within VGM that could use assistance to move an initiative forward. She has been recognized by VGM as a behind-the-scenes wonder in 2017 and was named to the first class of the VGM Women in Leadership program. That year-long program was designed to help women connect and educate each other. Malero selected her to a leadership team designed to make the Women in Leadership program permanent. Outside of work, Conger and her husband Chris are involved in supporting Grundy Center school athletics fundraisers and events, and she is active at her church. She and Chris are the parents of a son, Mason, who is 2, and a daughter, Madison, who is 1. Quote, Grundy Center is my home, so I want to make sure it's a great place for me to raise my family, and I want to make sure they, their children, have all the opportunities that I did, unquote. Conger cites fellow VGM employees Sarah Lawrus, Krista Mahi, and Jim Nygren CFO of the company, as people who have mentored her along the way. Loris, quote, has the incredible level of professionalism that I have learned a ton from. She said Nygren has challenged her to think about her role in new and different ways. Quote, prior to my relationship with him, my thoughts were leaning more toward customer experience and making sure that our customers had an impactful experience when they interacted with VGM. And he really challenged me to think about it not only from that perspective, but also from a financial perspective. It increased my financial acumen, she said. With Krista Myhe, who is president of Moxie, the marketing agency within VGM, Conger credits her for bringing her along from the beginning. Quote, I worked alongside her for most of my career here and have just learned a ton, Conger said. Our next story is written by Andy Malone. $1.7 million offer made on former Champions Ridge site in Waverly, Iowa. A developer has offered $1.7 million to buy the former Champions Ridge site, where the dream was once to hold youth ball diamonds, adult softball fields, and the Bremer County Fair. The windfall from the sale of the 141.67 acres of city-owned farmland would help pay for the second phase of the youth ball fields project at Cedar River Park, City Administrator James Bronner told the City Council on Monday. The city will go through the 30-day competitive bidding process and wait until December 3rd to see if a better offer is made on the site that sits on the western edge of Waverly along Highway 3. Attorney Bill Werger, who also serves as the city's community development director, urged councilors to weigh any similarly priced offers based on the buyer's intent behind the acquisition. Quote, I think it makes a difference if you have property that can be developed and you have somebody that wants to develop it, Werger said. You really want to work on something like that. We'll just see what happens during the next 30 days, unquote. A public hearing on the pending sale is scheduled at 7 p.m. December 6th at Waverly City Hall. Funds from the potential sale have been budgeted for the nearly completed 8 ball fields, Bronner said. In the meantime, the city offset the costs by pulling from its reserve as well as its proceeds from bond sales and funding for capital projects. The Cedar River Park, on the parkway and across from the Waverly Soccer Complex, is where the updated ball complex ended up after the Champions Ridge Board, made up of members of the Bremer County Fair Board and Waverly Ball Groups, announced in 2019 that youth ball groups decided to go in a different direction. The offer for $1.7 million is the largest of two, received within 30 hours of each other, according to Bronner, on the land that is currently farmed. The city formally sought competitive bids of $1.770 million or more from May 18th until June 17th, but received no offers. Quote, we have been in contact with a number of people who are interested in purchasing it for months and months, said Bronner in a telephone interview. It will be a good site for development, but could continue to be farmland. We're glad it will be taken off our hands and put back on tax rolls. You are listening to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls The Courier for Friday, November 5th on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now, let's turn to today's obituaries. Evelyn, Evie, Odessa, Carrot. Quote, you are my sun, my moon, and my stars. Evelyn, Evie, Odessa, Carrot gained her angel wings on Tuesday, November 2nd, 2021, at the Stead Family Children's Hospital in Iowa City, Iowa, after a courageous 14-month battle with cancer. Evie was born December 7th, 2019, the daughter of Bill and Elizabeth Carrot. From the very beginning, everything was on Evie's terms. She was a delightful baby with spunk and spice and the piece of puzzle that completed their family. She was baptized and welcomed into God's family on September 4th, 2020. At just 8 months old, Evie was called to fight a battle that no child should. She fought fiercely, and so often it was said that no one told Evie that she was sick. She spent too much of her short life at her second home on level 11 of the Stead Family Children's Hospital. Her joy during this time was walking with her mama up and down the halls, at first in her baby carrier, and then eventually in her pink car. Evie was a social butterfly, and everyone would try to solicit a smile from her during her walks. But you never knew if you would get her infectious smile or her famous side eye. She was able to spend a great deal of time at home as well. At home, she delighted in playtime with her daddy on the floor, using him as a jungle gym, and getting into mischief with her two older sisters and one brother. She had a natural curiosity that made her a problem solver and kept her parents on their toes. There was no baby-proofing that Evie could not undo. Evie loved her family, her blankie, especially the tags, Mona, Coco Melon, and her pink car rides. Evie had a light that was so distinct that to know her brought joy to each person that she touched. She was beloved by so many in this world. She experienced such love from all of the caregivers, other children, and their families that she met along the way. Her family would like to extend a thank you to her oncology team, as well as the support of her community at home. Evie will be dearly missed by her parents, Bill and Elizabeth Kehret of Parkersburg, older sisters Isabel and Irene Ariana, older brother Eli, paternal grandparents Doug and Maxine Kehret of Cedar Falls, and maternal grandparents Brian and Becky Redenius of Parkersburg. Funeral Mass will be held at 10:30 a.m. Saturday, November 6, 2021, at the Holy Family Parish, St. Patrick's Catholic Church in Parkersburg. Visitation will be from 4 o'clock to 7 o'clock p.m. on Friday at Redmond Funeral and Cremation Services in Parkersburg. Memorials may be directed to the family. Redmond Funeral and Cremation Services in Parkersburg is in charge of arrangements. Online condolences may be left at www.redmondfuneral.com. Raymond. Joanne Ragsdale, 80, of Raymond, died Tuesday, November 2, 2021, at Unity Point Allen Memorial Hospital in Waterloo. Joanne was born January 11, 1941, in Ringgold County, Iowa, near Mount Ayr, the daughter of Rory and Edna, maiden name Castor, Stevens. She graduated from Orange Township High School in Waterloo with the class of 1958. On September 26, 1959, she was united in marriage to Robert Ragsdale at the Orange Church of Brethren, Orange Township. Joanne traveled alongside Robert as he served in the Army. Once he was discharged, the couple settled in Janesville and eventually lived in the communities of New Hartford, Buck Creek, Waterloo, and Raymond. Joanne worked for several businesses over the years, as well as helping Robert on the family farm. If you knew Joanne, you knew she loved collecting jewelry. She enjoyed traveling locally and throughout the country, as long as there were stops at pawn shops and jewelry stops. She also enjoyed having dogs and cats around the house, and could often be found working on a craft project, knitting, or crocheting. Joanne was a great cook and made incredible tasting pies. She was active with the church, where she served in the kitchen and sang in the choir. Above all, she enjoyed spending time with her family, especially at the holidays. Funeral services will be held at 10:30 a.m. on Saturday, November 6, 2021, at the Janesville United Methodist Church, with Reverend Ron Bupp officiating. Burial will follow at the West Point Cemetery, rural Janesville. Visitation will be held from 4 o'clock p.m. to 7 p.m. on Friday, November 5, 2021, at the Kaiser Corson Funeral Home in Waverly, and for an hour prior to services Saturday at the church. Memorials may be directed to the family, and online condolences may be left at www.com. www.kaisercorson.com. Kaiser Corson Funeral Home in Waverly is in charge of arrangements. Their phone number is 319-352-1187. In Dysart, Steve Oliver, 68, of Dysart, died on November 3rd at his home, surrounded by his family. The visitation will be on Sunday, November 7th, 2021, from 4 to 7 p.m. at the Dysart United Methodist Church. The funeral will be on Monday, November 8th, 2021, at 10:30 a.m. at the Dysart United Methodist Church. Burial will take place in Middle Fork Cemetery in Reading, Iowa, on Tuesday, November 9th, 2021. Overton Funeral Home in Dysart is handling the arrangements, and their website is www.overtonfuneralhomes.com. In Cedar Falls, Patricia Ann Kellner, 90, of Cedar Falls, died Wednesday, November 3rd, at the Martin Suites in Cedar Falls. Massive Christian burial will be at 10:30 a.m. Tuesday, November 9th, at Blessed Sacrament Catholic Church, with burial in Mount Olivet Cemetery. Public visitation will be 4 to 7 o'clock p.m. Monday, November 8th, at Haggerty Wyckoff Grarup Funeral Service on South Street. Visitation also 1 hour prior to services on Tuesday at the church. Memorials may be directed to the family. Online condolences may be left at www.haggertywyckoffgrarup.com. In Lawler, Anthony, known as Tony Blazik, age 48, of Lawler, Iowa, died Sunday, October 31st, 2021, at the University of Iowa Hospitals in Iowa City. A massive Christian burial will be held at 10:30 a.m. Friday, November 5th, 2021, at Holy Family Parish in New Hampton, Iowa, with interment will follow at Calvary Cemetery in New Hampton. Friends may greet the family from 4 o'clock to 7 o'clock p.m. on Thursday, November 4th, 2021, at Hugeback Johnson Funeral Home and Cremation in New Hampton, where there will be a 7 o'clock p.m. parish scripture service. Visitation continues an hour prior to the service on Friday at the church. Online condolences for the Blazik family may be left at hugebackfuneralhome.com. Olwine, Clifford Leroy Hurst, was born on April 28, 1939, in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, to Arthur and Edith Hurst. Cliff passed away on October 31, 2021, at the age of 82, from pancreatic cancer. Cliff lived in Cedar Rapids until 1957, when his family moved to Olwine to start Hurst Roofing. Cliff continued to roof even after he started working for John Deere on October 24, 1963, where he retired after 30 years. Cliff married Linda Allen, and they had a son, Darby, later divorcing. On December 10, 1971, Cliff married Jolene, and together they had two daughters, Michelle and Stephanie. Cliff was an avid hunter and fisherman. He enjoyed mushroom hunting, coin collecting, going to the casinos, and playing cards. A celebration of life will be held at Leo's Restaurant in Olwine on Saturday, November 20th, 2021, from 11:30 to 1:30 p.m. Please use the front door. There will be a private burial in Troy Mills at a later date. Now let's turn to the sports page for some exciting local news there. Wolverines repeat as 2A state champs with mammoth win over Wolfpack. Story filed by Zach Martin of the Courier Sports. Cedar Rapids. The idea of a repeat championship was brought up pretty quickly in August. After all, Dyke New Hartford returned every starter from its 2020 state title team. It loaded its schedule with nearly 24 ranked opponents. And this story begins with a photograph of the Dyke New Hartford players celebrating their championship and holding up their trophy after defeating Western Christian on Thursday. And we go on now. This story was written before. It had the exact same ending Thursday night. Behind 13 kills apiece from Jaden and Peyton Peterson and the blocking of Ellie Nock, the top-ranked Wolverines won their second consecutive Class 2A state championship by triumphing over third-ranked Western Christian 25-16, 25-17, 25-22 at the Alliant Energy Powerhouse. Quote, super happy and blessed, Peyton Peterson said. Just continuing to fight and make sure it's not our last game, unquote. It marks the first time since 2016 and 2017 that Dyke New Hartford went back-to-back. Its head coach, Diane Harms, now has 8 titles, passing the legendary Barb Baker for 3rd most all-time in the state. She sits behind Tammy Verbeck of Western Christian and Tom Keating, who led Dubuque Wallert to 11 titles. Quote, it was so much fun to watch them develop, Harms said. The journey was relatively smooth sailing. The Wolverines didn't drop a set in their last 20 matches. They only dropped 5 sets in total as the state champs Pleasant Valley 5A and West Delaware 3A plus St. James Academy took them to 3 sets. Only 5A number 1 Iowa City Liberty defeated Dyke New Hartford, and it wasn't a 3-setter. Quote, that game was unfortunate, but we felt like we were together the whole time, Peyton Peterson said. Quote, that made us grow so much more. We needed to be on our game at all times, unquote. There were a lot of Saturday tournaments leading up to the Hy-Vee Classic on September 25th. Harms felt like DNH, 54-1, didn't compete with the energy it usually does. In her mind, the Wolverines needed a reset. Quote, we had to come back and really re-energize, she said. We needed a break to make that postseason run. Was it a blessing in disguise? Quote, I think it was a good thing, Wolverine setter Madeline Norton said. It taught us how to handle adversity, and it was good to learn. That helped us be able to be more confident, unquote. The Wolverines got off to fast starts in both of their matches leading up to facing the Wolfpack. Thursday was no different. Tied at 4, Dyke New Hartford reeled off 5 straight to take a commanding lead. Western Christian was in a side-out battle as the gap never got closer than 3, but never got larger than 4. That's when Nock stepped up. She had a solo block that gave the Wolverines a 20-15 lead, then proceeded to score 5 of the final 6 points. Quote, my teammates helped me bring the energy, Nock said. Closing all season was a big deal for us. We're glad we got it done tonight, unquote. Nock did something similar in the 3rd. After Dyke New Hartford called its 2nd timeout of the set, the junior had a block that put in 2 points away from celebration. When Peyton Peterson slammed down the final kill, a dog pile ensued. Norton and the Peterson sisters were named to the all-tournament team, with Peyton garnering the captain honors for the 2nd year in a row. Quote, we knew we needed to be up strong, Peyton said. We knew in the middle we had to take away the cutback, and then on the outside, we're pressing, unquote. Harms had the belief that the block was as strong as it was in the sweep against Denver in the semis. Nock, Peyton Peterson, and Marin Bixby all had at least 4 block assists. Quote, we always had confidence in ourselves we could be back there, Nock said. Yet the Wolverines had to fight and claw back in the 3rd set. Western Christian, 40-6, bolted out to a 9-2 lead, prompting the Wolverines to call their first timeout of the tournament. Quote, we were not serve receiving well. We were on our heels a bit, Harms said. We were making some bad decisions and choices. We knew that they were going to fight. We needed to get refocused, unquote. The Wolfpack maintained their lead until a 4-0 spurt put Dyke New Hartford up 14-12, and it never gave up the lead again. Norton finished with 32 assists, and 4 players finished with 9 digs in the back row. Verbeek put it bluntly when asked about the heightened level of play the Wolverines showed when the match got tight. They extended their 9-7 lead in the 2nd set behind an 8-0 run. Quote, Dyke New Hartford is just a whole other level of volleyball, she said. They have some special players. They dismantle everybody. They just won't let you go on a run, unquote. Is it too early to think about a three-peat? Quote, we want to enjoy this one, Harm said. Ending our season here is always our end goal. In order to reach that, Dyke New Hartford will need to replace libero Lexi Fager and two other defensive specialists, Lillian Bennett and Julian Buter. The only hitter the Wolverines lose is middle Taylor Hones. Quote, getting back in the gym, working hard, fine-tuning more things next year, Norton said. It is going to be so important, focusing on ball control and stepping up to be that leader, unquote. For now, the Wolverines will soak in another state championship. It was a season in which they seemingly always played someone tough and got their opponent's best shot. That simply wasn't good enough. Quote, volleyball is a sport of ups and downs, Peyton said. You're going to have your games you're on, your games you're off. You're going to get everyone's best run. We have to make sure we continue to want it, unquote. Zach Martin of the Courier files this next story about Class 4A championship. Go Hawks weren't ready for quick Bobcats in the 4A championship match, and it begins with a photograph of Waverly Shellrock's Paige Hendricks and Avery Weicher's as they console each other after the Go Hawks loss against Western Dubuque on Thursday. Cedar Rapids, too quick, too deep, too powerful. Waverly Shellrock had faced the gauntlet of attackers at the Iowa State Volleyball Tournament this week. It dealt with a record-breaking performance from Oskaloosa's Faith Durande. It overcame multiple hitters that were all over the court for North Scott. Top-ranked Western Dubuque was the final test facing the Gohawks on Thursday. They couldn't pass it. Behind the trifecta of Meredith Ball, Maddie Harris, and Libby Lansing, the Bobcats became the second school on Thursday to win their first state championship in school history as they fought off Waverly Shellrock 25-21, 25-17, 25-23 at the Alliant Energy Powerhouse in Cedar Rapids. Quote, getting on runs is one of our biggest struggles, Gohawks senior Avery Beckett said. Yeah, we lost, but it was such a big deal to be here. We have a lot of seniors that left a leadership role, unquote. Ball was the force on the left side. Lansing would overpower the middle. Harris had a handful of her kills from the back row. To Waverly Shellrock, 44-8, it was the speed at which Western Dubuque ran its offense that provided the toughest challenge. Quote, they run their stuff really quick, and we weren't ready for it, Beckett said. We didn't know how to execute and put our block up, unquote. There were rotations where Gohawks middle hitter Avery Weichers was on the bench for an extended period of time, particularly in the opening two sets. Weichers still finished with 9 kills, but it was on 19 attacks, a tournament low. Quote, you like to keep them in there all the time, WSR head coach Yvonne Woodland said. We just didn't quite have sync and the rhythm to beat a team like that. With Weichers on the sideline, that allowed the Bobcats to thrive. Trailing 7-5 in the first set, the Bobcats went on a 5-1 run to retake the lead. Waverly Shellrock crept to within 1 point on 2 different occasions. A service error by L.A. Thompson and back-to-back attacking errors gave Western Dubuque a 1-0 lead. After the Gohawks tied the second set up at 10 apiece, the Bobcats, who are 34-3, went on a long 13-3 run to go up double figures. Harris, Lansing, Ball, plus setter and 4A all-tournament team champion Madison Malls had multiple kills during the run. Quote, we went sluggish where we started doubting ourselves a little bit, Wooden said. If they look back, we'll see some things they didn't do, unquote. Still, Waverly Shellrock refused to go away quietly. It rallied down 12-3 that started with a 12-2 run to bring its deficit down to 4. It scored 4 or 5 points to be within 2. Then the two sides exchanged points for a bit until a 3-0 run tied the set at 19. Sophie Sedgwick gave the Gohawks their first lead at 21-20 after a dump kill. They tied it at 22 when Lansing kill and Beckett hitting error brought Western Dubuque to match point. Ball slammed down the final kill that prompted the celebration. Quote, "It wasn't our day," Beckett said. "We've played better volleyball. Our nerves got to us today," unquote. Beckett, the only Gohawk named to the all-tournament team, finished with a team-best 11 kills. It was the first time in a rare occurrence where Waverly Shellrock finished with a hitting percentage below triple digits. Quote, "It drains you out there playing these matches day in and day out," Wooden said. "We really didn't in system. You got to play good defense before you play good offense," unquote. Sedgwick ended her prep career with near 1,100 assists this season as she dished out 20 in her final match. Beckett led with 13 digs, while libero Annika Behrens had 12. Those are three key seniors that Waverly Shellrock will look to replace next fall. Weichers and Ellie Thompson are expected to anchor the front row in 2022. Quote, "We've got some juniors, sophomores, and freshmen coming up, so hopefully they'll take it seriously," Wooden said. Quote, "We got to find a setter to give them the ball and some gritty defensive players in the back," unquote. Now in Class 5A championship, Zach Martin, the Courier sports writer, files this story. Defense reigns supreme in 5A title match as Tigers see season come to an end, and it begins with a photograph of Cedar Falls team holding up their runner-up trophy after their loss against Pleasant Valley on Thursday. Cedar Rapids, Cedar Falls' calling card all season, has been its defense. It prides itself on being scrappy, led by libero UNI recruit Olivia Bronner and two other defensive specialists who are seniors. It didn't falter in its Class 5A state title match, quite the opposite. Pleasant Valley just matched the Tigers blow for blow. There were over 350 total swings between the two top five teams and over 200 digs. Quote, "It is something I've never seen before," Cedar Falls head coach Matthew Johnson said. The second-ranked Spartans used that defensive prowess and their height to disrupt the fourth-ranked Tigers in their 25-23, 28-26, and 25-13 triumph at the Alliant Energy Powerhouse on Thursday morning in Cedar Rapids. Quote, "Most of the things we asked these guys to do, they came out and did it," Johnson said. "We knew we were going to have to tee off from the service line. If you do that, you're going to live with some misses," unquote. There were 91 digs in the first set. Long rallies were prevalent, and plenty of players in the back row were diving. Most of those extended rallies were won by Pleasant Valley. Yet Cedar Falls, who are 32-9, had its chances to square the match at 1 apiece. It rallied down 22-19 and 24-22 to tie the set. It staved off 4 set points by the Spartans, but had untimely errors that kept the Tigers out of a position to nab the set. They had 2 attacking errors and a serving error that kept them from a set point. Quote, "It sucks," junior Katie Remmert said. "We fought really hard. You flip a few points, it is a whole different ball game. They just outplayed us today," unquote. It was all Pleasant Valley, 33-4, in the third set. The Spartans raced out to a 5-0 cushion that never trailed. The closest Cedar Falls got at any point during the set was 7. Pleasant Valley went on a 5-1 flurry to balloon their lead back to double digits. Then, after an Emmy Goodpaster kill, the celebration was on, and the Tigers felt the emotions of falling short. "In the end, they beat us out of it," Bronner said. "We couldn't pull it off. A lot of people came in nervous," unquote. It was a back-and-forth affair in the opener. PV bolted out of the gates to an 8-1 advantage. Then Cedar Falls scored 11 of the next 12 points to gain a 2-point lead. The Spartans had 5 unanswered points to regain the lead at 15-13. Behind 2 aces during service from Bronner, the Tigers tied the set at 20. A net violation and a Cora Ruff ace ended the set to give Pleasant Valley a 1-0 lead. Quote, "They're a great team," Remmert said. "We couldn't hit through them sometimes. I don't think we expected how good defensively they were going to be," unquote. Remmert, named to the 5A All-Tournament team, finished with a match-high 17 kills for Cedar Falls. She was the only hitter to finish with an efficiency north of .100. Summer Halson had the second most with 7. Johnson will have to wait until the season opener to get his 600th career win as a head coach. He also needs 4 more to notch 300 during his tenure at Cedar Falls. He'll have a nucleus of Remmert, Mahi, Halser, Hannon, and Devon Van Dyke to build around in 2022. The biggest losses will be in the back. Quote, "It's going to have to be as focused on the off-season," Johnson said. "We've got a lot of DSs that we like. Still, the Tigers have zero doubt they'll be back in a similar spot next fall." Quote, "We definitely can," Remmert said. "We have so many good back row people on our bench that will step up next year," unquote. And that does it for today's reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls The Courier for Friday, November 5th. I'm your reader, Bob Young. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. And thank you for listening to Your Iris, Iowa's first and only radio reading service.